This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hi, I'm John Oliver, member number one. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Hello, and welcome to Been There, Done That, Joy 94.9. It's with Chris and Gordon. Good morning. Hello, good Gordon.
Hello. Yes. It's all confusing here because I'm on the wrong side of the board. It's all right.
You've been on the wrong side of the boards for years.
Yes, I know. I know. But also on the line, we have Philip. Good morning,
yes,
Philip.
Yes, you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you, Philip. You're coming through loud and clear.
Thank you. Lovely to hear your voice again, Phil. Excellent. Stand by. It's all going to happen.
And we've also got
Colin.
Colin's in the...
Good day to you. Good.
Yes.
Good. Hi. Just say hi.
Hello.
It's the quiet one.
Yeah.
Thanks for being with us, because Joy's program, Been There, Done That, is for those people who've got a longer memory than the last nanosecond. We're beyond the goldfish phase, and we've got quite good memories, and we remember how things were. Not that that's a wrong thing or a bad thing. You've got to remember that everything started sometime, somewhere, that is currently existing. Even you, yourself, you, the listener, were born.
I had to start somewhere, didn't we?
Certainly did. Yes. And there's lots of things that have happened in our lives that affect us to this day. And one of the things about being gay is the fact that we've actually got some icons and dicons, people that have set good examples that still influence our lives these days.
Yes, that's true too. But we're also we've got also bits of history too, the things that have happened in history that have made things happen for the rest of the world. Chris, we've got Philip on the line. He's very good with computers.
Well, I don't know whether he's been watching the Olympics. Have you, Phil?
I have.
And what did you think of it? Because you were basically immobile, and that was your amusement for the last few weeks.
It's frustrating watching the world's fittest people jump around the place when you're stuck with a sore back.
Oh, I can imagine that, yes.
Too true.
And now that it's... did you see the closing ceremony?
Totally enthusiasm there.
Such enthusiasm.
I think those things, you have to be there. It's not really a television event.
Exactly.
No. So basically, normal services will be resumed very soon.
Yes, we'll have a Channel 7 back.
Yes, well, I watched a bit of it yesterday, and I thought, how dare the Olympics interrupt the advertising, but that was it, you know. but Philip, there's also things we're interested in is computers in the home, you know, where these days you can, they're getting these smart fridges and smart ovens and things that you can operate from externally from your mobile phone when you're outside.
I think we're being influenced to use them just to justify the fact that these devices can do it. I don't think it's necessary for my fridge to be able to talk to my supermarket. I like getting out there and walking around and having impulse purchases.
Yes, I agree with you, Chris. I'm one of those people that enjoy supermarket shopping. I love going around the supermarket, surveying the goods.
Meeting up at the fruit section.
That's right.
That's right, where all the gays are supposed to inhabit. Yeah. Now, Philip, what do you reckon about this? Is it going to really work?
It's an evolution. Basically, the machines have been creeping into everything for decades, and now they're starting to talk to each other. And that's only going to be of any use if it's better than what we currently do.
True.
And the jury is definitely out on that one.
Oh, good. Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, in fact, the World Wide Web only became, evolved out of a interconnection between a few universities, wasn't it?
Well, that was about people wanting to share and exchange data. Yeah. And that's really what the devices are now doing.
Yeah.
So where it goes is really going to be up to our imagination.
Or our need.
We haven't really started thinking. Well,
but sometimes these
things... It's like a lot of things a lot of things at the moment are solutions to problems that we desperately don't have.
Taking the computer on the fridge, for an example, that, as you say, Philip, that's an evolutionary thing. Like the home shopping, online shopping for your groceries is, the supermarkets are trying to push that dramatically, and I'm not sure how well that's going. But in time, I guess, once you put your shopping list into the computer on the fridge, that will become part of our lives eventually. So we'll all do that. Well, I won't. Well, I don't think any of us will. But
some people might. I think what it can't replace is the impulse buy or the remembering stuff when you're in the shop. Essentially, a shopping list on your fridge will appeal to some people, but not everybody. Mm.
Philip, do you think that these things are being made and even though we don't want them, we'll be basically forced to buy them and install them?
You know, because the best thing about our system is all this stuff gets thrown at us, and if we don't like it, we don't have to take it.
That's true.
The number of technical companies that have gone bust in the last, say, 30 years greatly exceeds the number that currently exist.
Right.
But the
so
other thing
ideas
that
come and go.
But what freaks me out is that there is a certain company that seems to be grabbing control of all the information and everything and becoming the big brother of 1984 that we always dreaded and feared.
Is that a company that sounds like Google?
Oh, it could be. It could be. But am I...
Or starts with G and ends in Google.
am I being paranoid?
A little bit. But Microsoft were the big evil corporation for a very long time, and they've lost their way, so... Rest assured, Google isn't forever.
Oh, good.
Nothing is forever, Philip. Nothing.
Especially in this business.
Yeah.
Now, how is your young Eddie going to cope if, in fact, you have an automatic dispenser that's run by a computer, but then the computer needs to be rebooted? How's he going to get on?
Well, you're talking about a very fussy eater.
Yes.
I can tell you now, wouldn't take a crumb from a machine.
Oh, right. It has to be by hand.
Yes, and it's got to be the one he wants at that particular moment.
God, I think Eddie's a small, spoiled little puppy dog somewhere along the line.
He certainly is.
Yes, and you've done it well.
I'm getting a dirty look now because I'm talking to the phone and not to him.
I can relate, Phil. I can relate to having a fur baby in the house.
Oh, right.
Well, it's his show.
Yeah, but one of the other things... Yeah, keep going.
I was going to say the machine can't react the way a human can.
No.
And some of them can be programmed to look like they're reacting, but artificial intelligence is just that. Artificial.
Yeah, true. There's certain useful things like the pay wave that means that we can do without coins in our pockets. And let's face it, when was it? It was back in 1990 that the 1 and 2 cent coins disappeared. That saved our pockets. Now the 5 cents are looking like they're going the same way. And so money is, physical money that you can touch is going to be disappearing from our lives.
It may eventually. The thing with pay wave is that we like it. So that one's going to survive. There's Apple Pay, which is the next evolution, where basically you use your phone instead of the credit card.
Oh, that's the one the banks are all screaming about, and they're trying to form a cartel to fight against, yes. And the ASIC have said, no, they can't form a cartel.
But that's being used.
That's the funny thing about Australian companies. The rest of the world's embracing it, and we're fighting it.
Yeah, well, I will say that I have seen my friend in Germany pay his parking meter with his phone as he stands in front of the parking meter.
That's becoming the Internet of Things that's being suggested. It's like having sensors in the road to tell your car that if there's frost or ice on the road, and your car can say, well, I don't want to go that way.
But Phil, aren't they? Yeah, I saw something on the television just very, very recently about there's a council, I think in Melbourne, Sydney, I'm not sure, but they're trialling that sensor in the road where instead of having the parking attendant, quote me if I'm wrong, that the sensors will know if you've been there too long.
That's
so
already
that's being trialled.
I've got that outside my house right now.
It's already installed, Colin. Yes, quite a few places.
What happens is that the parking inspector drives down the street and he's got a little iPod thing in his hand, and it tells him which sensors are reporting a car that's been there too long. Then he gets out and writes a ticket.
Wow.
Nasty.
Why can't he give you a ticket via computers? I mean, if they're going to do it that way, they should be able to do it the other way as well.
Well, the sensor in the road just measures whether that piece of metal has been there too long. It can't get out and read the license number.
Yeah.
That's good. And lucky last little thing before we let you go, are rubbish tins around Melbourne that have got a little brain in them. They're compacting rubbish bins for high use areas, and they swallow and condense and crush all the rubbish as it goes in. It still only needs to be emptied once or twice a day rather than the 8 times a day that the track normally comes past at the moment. So that's a useful thing. I agree with that one.
One warning with that one.
Oh no, what?
Never confuse your budgerigar with a lemon.
And don't hop in to pick something out, you might be compacted.
That's right.
Thank
Think
you.
Twice before you throw it out.
Thank you, Phil. We'll be in touch next week. Hopefully you'll be here. But
well, hopefully I'll be there in person.
Good on you.
Oh, we'd love to see that.
Love to see that too.
Well, soon.
You're with Chris, Gordon, Phil and Colin. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Been There, Done That with Gordon, Chris and Colin. Thanks for being with us. On today's show, what we have left to talk about is some people obtaining their freedom, some people in the world who were under tight control by masters, and they were slaves, and they eventually got their freedom. And we're talking about three gay icons, Stephen Fry, Ludwig II, the King of Bavaria, and Leonard Bernstein, all powerful people in their own realms and very interesting backgrounds to boot. And then we'll be talking about the celebration of the Gurindji people, the Wave Hill, at the Wave Hill cattle station, where they had really bad living and wage conditions, and they conducted a walk-off. And we'll talk you more about that. But once again, they obtained their freedom by taking steps. But anyway, we'll talk about
William Wilberforce.
I don't know these people. They can't get a magic name.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. Didn't you learn about William Wilberforce at school?
No, I didn't.
Oh, we didn't either, actually.
We did.
Oh,
we did.
Well.
But education in WA was so much higher.
Oh, bunch of bum barrel.
Those Westies always from the West there.
He was born on the 24th of August, 1759. So it's sort of around this anniversary of this time. He was born in Britain, and he studied at Cambridge University, where he actually befriended England's future Prime Minister, William Pitt the Younger. But Wilberforce became Member of the Parliament for Hull, and during the 20s he became a Christian and was motivated for social reforms, basically as a byproduct of his active and practical Christianity. He was strongly influenced by a former slave trader, John Newton, then the leading evangelical Anglican clergyman of the day, and Wilberforce said that this is not particularly crash hot. So he set up a committee for the abolition of slave trade, and Britain, of course, was one of those who had been, with the colonies, putting all the slaves to work for meagre rations and pay.
That
actually spread out here to Australia. They anybody found a new country, they gave them a box of trinkets and said, there you are. Aren't you rich people? Thank you very much for giving us your land, they didn't really do.
When Wilberforce tried to enter the anti-slavery bill into Parliament the first time, there were so many of the politicians owned land in America, and they relied on the slave trade to keep their places going because they tried to get the native Indians to work, and they didn't do it.
No.
And so they decided that they would bring slaves over from Africa, go to Africa, get the people and take them into America. And, of course, the politicians voted it down, and it was quite a number of years before Wilberforce actually managed to get the whole thing through.
He was sneaky. He used the flags under which the slave boats traded.
That's right.
He said, well, if they are English boats, we here in England can ban that from happening.
That's right.
And the French were also shifting slaves around, so that wasn't actually within their bailiwick. They couldn't actually influence that. But the Americas were, at that stage, still a British colony.
That's right. Yep. And this is the problem with it. It caused all this to happen, and of course now they have all these African-Americans.
Mm.
That are still being downtrodden, you know.
Well, it's not a problem. Yes, it is a problem. I was going to say it's not a problem. But yes, it is a social inequity that needs to be adjusted and rebalanced, and a lot of people can't see beyond the skin colour difference.
That's right.
And they're always, I can't relate to that person because they're not the same as me. Well, I don't see that in the mirror.
This is a thing that's been going on for years, of course. But then, of course, there was another country that didn't abolish slavery straight away, and that was the country that's just been in the news very, very recently.
Oh, for the Olympics.
For the Olympics. Mm. Was Brazil. Brazil had a slave trade that went for years and years and years after the British finished.
Well, the British slave trade ended in 1807, and it was 81 years later that Brazil finally stopped importing their slaves from Africa. And apparently 4 million slaves were imported to Brazil.
That's
four
right.
4 million.
But Brazil being basically a Portuguese country, because they still, their language is Portuguese.
Yeah.
They had colonies in Africa, and they would just go and raid their own colonies and take the Africans from Africa over to Brazil.
And talk to them in Portuguese.
That's right.
And that's the language.
They were Portuguese. They took them from Portuguese to Portuguese, so it didn't matter. You know, this is why they could get away with it. They got away with it for years and years and years. And they were doing the slave trade well before the American slave traders. I think the slave trade in Brazil went for about 300 or 400 years.
Mm.
It was a huge amount of time. That's why they had 4 million people there, I guess.
Yeah, but they were doing, the slaves were doing the sugar and other crops. Mm. What else?
Well, sugar was very popular up in the northern part of Brazil. That's where it was growing very, very well. And that's where the slaves were taken so that they could be in the area where they needed most.
Mm. And do we know where the when slavery ended in South America?
What 1888.
1888,
I
was
mean,
it?
That's not all that long ago.
I'm thinking in the big picture of our lifetime, or globally, it really is just sort of a blip in our time. It's not a long time. We think, it's 100 years or whatever ago, but it's not a long time ago, is it, really?
No, not at all. No. Not at all. And it's a disgusting trade, of course, but,
They were using the slaves to go down or dig for gold.
Mm.
And imagine the working conditions there and the safety record and everything. There would have been millions.
But there is still slave trade going on today. There are a lot of sex workers are basically slaves.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
You know, they're bought in to be, they get them from an overseas country, and they take them to a new country, and they go to be au pairs or whatever it is, and the finish is up. They're in working in brothels.
They bring them in under the pretense they're going to be, you said, au pairs.
That's
or
right.
similar.
Yeah.
And
But even if they are au pairs, they're quite often 7 days a week, 12 hours a day.
That's right.
Not let out of the house sort of thing.
There's a huge lot of people being imported out of the Eastern European countries into Britain by slave traders, and we've had a few people in Australia that they've been found to be slaves, sex slaves, yes. Mm. So it's still happening.
Well, just getting back to the trades, you've got to remember too that in England at the time, there were kids down the coal mines, kids 12 years old and even younger, down in the mines. I mean, they just didn't have any human dignity laws, and they have come up over the centuries since then.
Did they use the children, the very young, because they were small?
That's
was
right.
That correct?
They could get into the smaller things to get the coal and the stuff out.
Mm. Back in the days, too, digressing a little bit, that's where they used the canaries, wasn't it?
That's right.
For the gas. If there was any gas,
if the canaries died, they had to get out. Yeah.
And, you know, without Brazil and the coffee and the slave trade that went and collected the coffee beans, we probably wouldn't be hooked as we are on coffee.
Yeah, but I think the best coffee is still grown in Africa. I think the best coffee group comes from Africa.
Mm.
Yeah, and they have another thing there with slave trade. With they basically have the young people picking the coffee and under almost slave conditions.
Yeah.
I can't help thinking, gentlemen, that the contradiction between, 10 minutes ago we were talking about the technology and the advances we've made, and here we are talking about these slave trade that really hasn't been that long ago.
Like, that's right.
Dichotomy?
There is a dichotomy, but so there's been a huge social shift in just two centuries.
Well, we're here to attest to it. I mean, I come from a country town without child, without telephones and televisions, and I thought it was a great thing to run next door to the neighbours and wind the handle on the phone and talk to the operator. I mean, that's not long ago. But I use aviation too as an interesting 50 years. Look what's happening. Mm. It's moved very quickly. But then we're digressing from what you were talking about.
Well, everything improves eventually, and it was William Wilberforce that stopped they've started the thing to stop slave trading.
Yeah.
But as we say, it's still going on.
And he was a politician in the House, and he was able to influence the laws and get them passed to have slavery abolished,
yep.
and also pass the laws stopping the ships taking them.
Yeah.
And from small things, big acorns grow sort of thing.
It's such a cruel, when you really stop and think, it's such a cruel thing, isn't it? Because of the colour of someone's skin, they were subjected to such... There was a movie recently in the last year or two called, was it 12 Years a Slave or something?
Yeah, that's right.
I couldn't have watched that. Yeah. I just didn't watch it because I didn't want to see the...
It was the same with the colonisation of Australia. They felt that the Aboriginals had no idea what was going on.
Mm.
They'd lived here for nearly 60,000 years or something or other, and they knew exactly what to do with this country because of the country that it was.
Yeah.
And the British wouldn't take any notice of what the Aboriginals were trying to tell them. And they nearly starved to death until the second lot of ships came. But that was happening in America as well. All right. I think it's about
Thank
time.
Thank you. It's almost time to have a piece of music. But when we come back, we'll be talking about Stephen Fry, Ludwig II of Bavaria, and I was going to say Elmer Bernstein, but it's no. Lenny Bernstein.
Leonard Bernstein. Okay.
You're on Joy. Been there, done that. Gordon, Chris, and Colin.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
You're with Been There, Done That. Gordon, Chris, and Colin. And you. Thank you very much for being with us today. It's wonderful. And thanks very much for your feedback. If you'd like to speak to the show, send us an email, beenthere@joy.org.au, and we'll see what we can do for you, or about you, and whether you're...
And if you've got a favourite song you'd like us to play, we can do that for you too, as long as it's in our record library.
Yes, well, in our digital library, Gordon.
Digital, and we could perhaps play a CD if they needed it.
Oh,
we can do those.
What are those old-fashioned things?
We're so talented here. We can do several things at once.
One of the LPs, would you believe, that I have got at home is about one of our next guests that we're going to be talking about, one of our icons, and that is about Leonard Bernstein. But let's talk about Stephen Fry first, because he's around. He's a very naughty boy, and he's on the TV, and he gets himself into all sorts of strife in a show called QI.
A little controversial.
Quite interesting.
QI, quite interesting, yes. He usually has several other gay people on the show with him, whether being women or men.
Yes.
And if you know who they are, you know whether they're gay or not. And, it's a very funny show. But the only thing with that show, sometimes I feel that the audience noise is so applauding and laughing and clapping, you can't actually hear what they say.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't come through across.
But it's a very happy show. It brings a smile to your face for half an hour, like nothing else can.
But have you read any of his books? Moab Is My Washpot. That's his first book that he wrote, and it's about his life when he was young, when he first went to school.
Yeah.
And he had to go to boarding school when he was very, very young. He hated it because he didn't like sport. He didn't like playing sport.
Sounds like me.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting book. It tells how he's quite open about how he stole money from the other kids, and then a bit later he got into credit card fraud and spent 3 months in jail.
Yeah.
He's very honest. He just says everything. It's all there.
What was the name of his first book?
Moab Is My Washpot. I think that's the correct name
of
the book.
Yes, that's the way it is. But it sounds like he was an eccentric even from a young age. So therefore he might have been somewhere, and I'm not trying to put him down or anything, but he might have been on one of those spectrums, as they say.
Well, he's manic depressive.
Well, that... Yes.
He is a manic depressive person, and he admits that, and he's done a television show about his own manic depression.
Now...
A documentary?
Yeah.
Mm.
But he was well-educated, wasn't he? He went to Queen's College at Cambridge.
Where else but Queen's College?
No.
Is there a school for it?
Is there a school,
a school for it?
No wonder I've missed out. Goodness gracious.
With a voice like yours, Colin, I don't think you did. You must have done it by correspondence.
They wouldn't have me. They wouldn't have me. They said I talk too much.
But his manic depression doesn't come through. Perhaps his bravado is the counterpoint to the manic depression.
I think you might find that he's on good medication too that would stop it. You know, they can level it out with proper medication. But he met his comedy partner, Laurie.
Hugh Laurie, yes.
Hugh Laurie, and they met at Cambridge, and they've been friends ever since. And Stephen Fry was best man at his wedding, and he's the godfather to Hugh Laurie's three children. And he's a friend of Prince Charles. He was at Charles and Camilla's wedding. He's well-liked all through Britain in all levels of society.
Now, and he's also married.
Yes, he's married his partner.
Mm. Oh, okay.
16 years they were married.
Married in 2015.
Sorry. 2015, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong piece of notes of my notes that I wrote down.
Because they couldn't get married until 2015. We're still waiting to be able to get married. When we mentioned that?
I nearly mentioned that, the P word. We might not go down that track today.
Okay, all right.
It's a big subject. Plebiscite. I said it. Stop. Yes, getting back on track.
Anyhow, but Stephen Fry, his partner is a model, isn't he? What does his partner do? I'm having a mental here.
Yeah, I didn't write that down. Sorry. So, anyway,
We'll have to investigate.
But anyhow, he's a very, very funny entertainer, and he's done some wonderful things. He did a very good series about nature, and he went all around the world. He was even here in Australia. He comes to Australia occasionally to watch the cricket. He's a mad fanatic about cricket, and he's a member of the Norwich Football Club as well.
Now, he's actually also recorded, because he's got a very good speaking voice.
Oh, yes.
Nice timbre. He's also known for his voiceovers and reading all seven of the Harry Potter books for the UK audiobook recordings.
That must have taken him a little while to do.
That was actually done in studios where one of our earlier Joy people, volunteers, has gone over and now works at.
You mean...
Young Dan DeVoe.
Dan DeVoe, yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So he's actually sat in with, been on the other side of the glass wall where Stephen Fry's been reading and recording.
Yeah. So Stephen Fry's had a higher profile in the UK for many, many years. I mean, here in Australia, I think, it'd be fair to say it's only in the last few years he's become more known.
Probably because of the television series that he's done and the QI.
He was in Blackadder as well.
Blackadder, yes.
Tony Robbins. And so many people, and they just hammed it up wonderfully. They don't have the restrictions that I think the US shows.
Talking about hamming it up, what about Ludwig of Bavaria? He hammed up his life, didn't he?
You're
a great fan of Ludwig because you've been to all his castles.
Well, I have indeed. I'm almost an honorary Bavarian, so Goose got to you too.
I don't know what you're talking about, but okay.
but he's actually all these fancy castles that we see in, say, the front of a Disney movie, they're modelled upon Ludwig's Bavarian.
That is true, because the actual castle that Disney uses is a model of the Bavarian.
But young Ludwig, he was the king. He inherited the throne.
He was there very early, wasn't he? He was only quite young when he...
I think the management sort of controlled him a bit in some ways, but there's lots of loot in the bank account, and Ludwig decided that let's have a castle or three or four, and he was pretty good on the interior decorations.
Was he?
Like gold, like swans, like I'll do a palace in this sort of theme and I'll do it in that. And he was really flamboyant in that regard. He did have a queen, but they didn't consummate the marriage.
Oh dear.
And all in all, things went wrong.
So who got the lot when he was actually, we're not sure whether he was murdered or not.
Thing is that he actually ran out of money in the state of Bavaria, the kingdom of Bavaria, fell upon very hard times, and they couldn't trade in the castles. No one wanted to buy them, would you believe, of course.
Naturally.
So it was like Prix de Moore again all over.
But he came to the throne very early, like at 18. Can you imagine being a king at 18? I mean,
well,
no, I couldn't.
I've been a queen all my life.
I have too, but king, no.
But he liked Richard Wagner as a composer, and he picked up some of the themes of that and decorated his castles accordingly. But then the management of the state said, "You're not going the right way, Kingo." And he was actually led into the water, we understand, and of the lake at Starnberg. And there is some flexibility about the story of how he met his death. Some people suggest he was just walked in and then gently introduced to the water and drowned. Others say that he went for a swim and he didn't come out, and others might have suggested other options. But he was taken out of circulation like the 1 and 2 cent pieces.
Oh, right.
And if I can put it like that, yeah. So there, yes. So that was poor Ludo, but yes, Gay is the twig is bent.
So you're saying you really like shopping, really, spending the money.
But he didn't have a computer to tell him what to buy.
But he knew how to spend it.
You're on Joy. When we come back, we'll be talking about Wave Hill, Rabbit Proof Fence, and we'll get on to Lenny Bernstein as well.
All right, we're going to be having a song called Youthful. It's probably about all of us.
Oh, of course it is, yes.
This is Senator Penny Wong. You're listening to Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Colin, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that, Joy 94.9. And in this little bracket of chat, we'll be talking about Leonard Bernstein, an American composer, and we'll be talking about Wave Hill Cattle Station and what that means in our Australian history. But Leonard Bernstein was an American composer, child of immigrant Jewish refugees. But he was a sickly and shy child, but he fell in love with music. After, you know, a relative actually gave him an old weathered upright piano, something to play, and he was introduced to music. I was introduced to music through Leonard Bernstein on an old LP that I had where he talked about the story of jazz music and its origins and how the beats create the rhythm of jazz music, of the way some instruments are mocked by the voice, the human voice. And he explained it in wonderful terms, and I used to play this LP over and over trying to understand what he was saying, and by the end of about 15 plays of the LP, I really got a handle on this. And he introduced lots of people, lots of kids in the US to music via his chats at concerts and things like that. But he was married, except that he was always gay. And his wife, with whom he had some children, said, "Listen here, you are a gay man. You are a homosexual. You can't be what you're not. You've got to be what you are. Just get on with it."
"But I want to marry you."
Yes.
Is what she said.
Because he was such a brilliant conductor of music. He was a breath of fresh air. He was actually given a conductorship of an orchestra almost impromptu, and he delivered such a performance of this piece of work that the critics fell over.
Yeah, because
in amazement.
The conductor that was supposed to appear didn't appear. He couldn't do the performance, and Bernstein had not even read the music or basically seen the music until he conducted it, and they said it was one of the best performances of the piece of music they'd ever heard. And he from then on, he was just a conductor. But he went on to be in the Berlin Philharmonic and the other one. It was a couple of
years. He was the New York Philharmonic.
Vienna.
Yeah. The New York Philharmonic in 1958, I think. He was director
in residence there for a while. Mm. Yeah. He was all over the world, actually.
Yeah.
But he didn't get to Australia. I think he did come to Australia at one stage. Yeah. But he was gay all his life, and he did have his partners as well as his wife.
Oh, he had lots of little people as well. Mm. But once again, it might be that he was bent in a particular way because he had social skills complications as well.
Mm.
There you go.
Well, we're all different, aren't we?
We certainly are all different. Wave Hill. That was a cattle station out in the top end of WA.
Yeah, okay, Northern Territory.
Northern Territory, sorry. Mm. And it was run by the Vestey Corporation.
That's
some
right. Lord Vestey.
Yeah, some very rich Brits. And they had all the slaves, all the local Aborigines were basically slaves.
We were talking about slavery before.
And it happened here on our soil.
They got a very small amount of money, but they got lots of food. They were paid in food and a bit of money.
I know. Hello. Yeah. You know, I've got extra 4 kilo of flour I don't want. What am I going to do? And, you know, there was no liberty for them at all. They were just working, and not very good. So they got jack of this, and they actually decided to go on strike, withdrew their labour, and they sat down, and they had a walk-off, basically. They just said, we're going.
Yeah, but they did it at one other station previous to that. There was two strikes, but the first one wasn't successful. It didn't sort of work. But then they got one of the union organisers from Darwin decided that he was going to organise this, and he went down and organised it and pulled them out. And I think the strike went for about 9 years.
Mm. 9 years? Well, that's quite a radical thing to do,
wasn't it? But they finished up getting their own property. They got their own land and everything. And it was Gough Whitlam who went up there and picked up a handful of dirt and poured it into the hand of Ling Yari.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was a symbolic thing to say, this is your land.
Yeah,
you know,
give it back. Because we're talking 1966, not that long ago.
No, not that long ago.
50 years.
And they just had a big celebration up
there.
They
did. It was the anniversary. The celebration was to remember that 200 Gurindji stockmen and house servants walked off the station in protest against the poor treatment that they were receiving. Mm-hmm. And it started the movement for human rights.
Well, Aboriginal rights and land rights as well.
Well, land rights, that's right.
And, of course, the celebration they just had was also Eddie Mabo. They brought Eddie Mabo and Ling Yari together, and they just had this big celebration in the middle of up in the Northern Territory, and they swapped territorial flags from the different races.
You know. As you're saying, Chris, I was surprised to learn that it was illegal up until 1968. I mean, that's not a long time ago, to pay Aboriginal workers more than a specified amount in goods and money. I mean, we're talking about our life in our lifetime.
That's right.
Yeah,
amazing. It was the way they were treated, unfortunately, you know. Mm. But at least they're getting back to where they should be, or coming back to where they should be. You know, there still is a long way to go, of course, the way they're treated in different countries. Of course, it's just I don't know. I get very annoyed and very upset about it.
Yeah. The cattle station's about 800 kilometres south of Darwin, so obviously there's no shops around there, and so what do you need money for?
Yeah.
You know, we're giving you your
tucker.
You've still got to cook it or whatever, true. Just imagine being in that sort of a situation. Can't get off onto your own private lands.
Then again, of course, there's another thing that happened in Australian history too that sort of affected that sort of area, was the introduction of the rabbit to Australia.
Oh, golly gosh.
29 of them came in to be shot. I don't think they shot many of them because they developed into a plague.
Well, they started out, of course, in Western Victoria.
Yes.
Someone let a few rabbits loose.
Yep.
And then a few years later, they had been plague proportions here in Australia. The people in the West decided, we've got a desert between you and us. We'll keep the starlings, or you keep the starlings and the rabbits, please.
Yes, but they found out that there were some of the rabbits had made it across the Nullarbor Plain, which was the thing. So they decided they would build a fence, and the fence went from the southern coast of West Australia, basically up the dividing line between South Australia and Victoria and West Australia, and it went up and it curved around and came out around about Port Hedland, it was 1,800 kilometres long.
A massive distance.
And they completed it in about a year. It was very quick that they got it done.
And it wasn't, I mean, I think you were saying too that the fence, because they're rabbits, they dig under, the fence actually went down into the ground, what about?
18 inches, is about a half a metre.
Yeah.
About a half a metre down into the ground. Yeah. And it was just nearly a metre and a half tall or something or other. The rabbits had already passed where they were building the fence, so they had to build another two fences to try to keep them out of WA, but they didn't really. Because I can remember after the war, my father and I used to go trapping rabbits for food.
Yeah, underground mutton.
Underground mutton. Mm-hmm.
That was very good then.
Well, even in my day, you know, like in my early days, we used to go out into the country, and I never got into shooting animals. To this day, I couldn't eat a rabbit. We used to eat rabbits. Family had rabbits.
They're lovely. I tell you, they're very tasty. They're very tasty. Look, we've come to the end of our hour and a lot of time. We've got to move on.
Yes, we do.
Oh, thank you, Gordon. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Phil, in the distance.
In the ether.
And come and join us next week, because we'll be talking about entirely different batch of subjects.
Something that we didn't get time to talk about today, perhaps, or a lot more
exactly.
New ones anyhow. But
join us then.
Yep, join us then.
So thanks for being with us.
Right.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.